Speaking on this program is Franklin Kemp.
I want to read tonight from the 20th chapter of the book of Acts, beginning in verse 28. Take heed therefore unto yourselves and to all the flock over which the Holy Ghost hath made you overseers, to feed the church of God which is purchased with his own blood. I know this, that after my departure grievous wolves shall enter in among you, not sparing the flock. Also of your own selves shall men arise, speaking perverse things to draw away disciples after them. Therefore watch and remember that by the space of 3 years I cease not to warn everyone night and day with tears. Now, brethren, I commend you to God and the word of his grace, which is able to build you up, to give you an inheritance among them which are sanctified. I have coveted no man's silver or gold or apparel. Yea, yourselves know that these hands have ministered unto my necessities and to them that were with me. I have showed you all things, how that so laboring you ought to support the weak, and to remember the words of our Lord Jesus, how he said, it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. I think when we study the subject of leadership, and this morning I showed how that all of us are involved in leadership, not just elders and deacons and preachers, but older men and older women, young people, employer and employee have an opportunity of demonstrating leadership every day of our life. But it's interesting to me that in the 20th chapter of the book of Acts, Paul, in talking about some of the leadership and some of the problems that the church would face, closed that discussion by saying, it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. I think it's unfortunate that when we think about leadership, whether it's in the eldership or the deacons or preachers, or whether it's mothers leading in the home or fathers leading in the home or wherever it may be, that we fail to see that in order for leadership to be effective, there has to be a philosophy of life that's more interested in giving than it is in getting. I think it's striking that the only two direct quotations that are found in the book of Acts or in the epistles that come directly from Christ are given by Paul. Paul was not associated with Christ in his personal ministry. He did not become an apostle until after Christ had ascended back to the right hand of God. Christ had to appear to him personally in order for him to become an apostle, so he might have a direct personal call into the apostleship. And though we have epistles written by John, epistles written by Peter, who lived and served during the ministry of Christ and were trained by him, we do not have a single direct quotation from them. And therefore it's interesting that the two quotations that we have are from Paul. This is one of them. And yet we do not know when Christ said this. It's not found not recorded in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. The other direct quotation that Paul gives us is found in 1 Corinthians 11 in connection with the institution of the Lord's Supper, where he quotes from the things that Christ said when he instituted the Lord's Supper. But I want to take the time tonight to talk about this passage, because I think here is what the Christian life is all about. This is not something that is just for elders, but it's for every person. And in order for leadership to be effective, this is the philosophy that we must have of life. I'd like to raise the question, and I'd like for us to think about the question. Why do I serve God anyway? Have you ever thought about that? Why do I serve God? What's it all about? Do I serve God for what I can get? Or do I serve God for what I can give? In the book of Job, we have the account of where Satan tempted, God asked Job the question, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect man, an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? I want you to note what Satan said. Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God far not?" And so what he said is, Job fears God because of what he can get from you. That's the only reason he served you. And if you don't believe that, just let me have him in my hands a while. I'll take everything that he's got away from him and show you that when he fails to receive anything, he's not getting anything, as you think, or as men think about it, then he'll not serve you any longer. And then the first chapter, of course, gives the account of how Job lost his children and everything that he had. Verse 21, he said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." And all of this, Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. Now, what does that say? That's saying that Job was not serving God so that he could get cattle, and that he'd be rich in things. That wasn't the reason he served God. And so Satan said, "Let me try again." God said the second time in chapter 2, "Hast thou considered my servant Job? There's none like him in all the earth. A perfect man and upright, one that feareth God and escheweth evil. And still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause." And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin. Yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life." And God said, "Well, now I'm going to let you test him. Just spare his life." And so we know the story. And it became so bad until his wife said, "Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die." But he said unto her, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil?" And all of this did not Job sin with his lips. Now, the real purpose that's given, as God said to Satan, "I want you to understand why Job's serving me. He's not serving me for what he can get." And Satan said, "That's all he's interested in. When you take away from him what he's getting and leave him only with just you and the values that he has in spiritual things, he'll give it up." And his wife said to him, "It's not worthwhile. What are you getting out of it? Look at what's happened. It's not worth anything. Throw in the towel and quit." And Job said, "You're a foolish woman. I'm not going to do that." Now I raise again the question, why do I serve God? What's it all about? Suppose that God would say of me like he did of Job, "Hast thou considered my servant?" And then Satan said, yeah, I know why he's serving you. Let me give him a test." And then trials and difficulties begin to come. And what happens? Now, I want to take the time tonight to try to illustrate, if I can, the significance of what Paul said in Acts 20:35. "It's more blessed to give than it is to receive." That's a philosophy of life that every Christian ought to come to have. And unless we appreciate that, we do not really understand the meaning of Christianity. Let me go back to the Old Testament and take two examples to try to illustrate and demonstrate what I'm talking about. In the 18th chapter of 1 Samuel, we have the account of Jonathan and David. Listen to the verses. "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it unto David, and his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle." Now think about what Jonathan is doing. He's taking what he has now and he's giving that to David. Turn to the 20th chapter of 1 Samuel, and Jonathan's loyalty and friendship to David is going to be tested. David is fleeing from Saul. Saul is trying to take his life. And so David is concerned about what's going to happen. Now think about the fact. Here's Jonathan with his own father trying to do what Jonathan knows is wrong, to take the life of David. Will blood be thicker and stronger than friendship and loyalty and love? Why did Jonathan love David? Was it in order that he might receive something back? What was back of his interest and his concern for David? Well, we know what the story was. We know what it says about it. And so Jonathan enters into covenant with David and explains to him how he's going to help him know whether or not Saul has changed his mind, whether it be safe for him to come to the feast. But in verse 5 of 1 Samuel 20 it said, David said unto Jonathan, behold, tomorrow is the new moon. I shall not fail to sit with the king at meat, but let me go that I may hide myself in the field unto the third day at even. If thy father at all miss me, then say, David earnestly, ask leave of me that he might run to Bethlehem, the city, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. If he say, thus it is well, thy servant shall have peace. But if he very wroth, then he be sure that evil is determined upon him. And then, of course, Jonathan explains to him how he's going to know, let him know whether or not Saul had changed his mind and whether or not he's going to try to kill him. And so verse 16 said, so Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, let the Lord even require it at the hand of David's enemies. And Jonathan caused David to swear again because he loved him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Then Jonathan said to David, tomorrow is the new moon, and thou shalt be missed, because thy seat shall be empty. And so there is Jonathan's interest and care and concern for David. Not what he can get out of it, but because he's wanting to do what's right and there's something that he wants to give. So we pass on then to 2 Samuel chapter 4, and in verse 4 I read, and Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet. He was 5 years old when tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass, as she made haste to flee, that he fell and became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. And so here is a child, Jonathan's son, 5 years old. During the commotion was taking place, the death of Saul, and all that was occurring at that time, the nurse picked him up and started to run with him and dropped him, and he was left lame. Now turn with me to the 9th chapter of 2 Samuel. And David said, is there yet any that is left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake? And there was of the house of Saul a servant whose name was Ziba. And when they had called him unto David, the king said unto him, art thou Ziba? And he said, thy servant is he. And the king said, is there not yet any of the house of Saul that I may go show the kindness of God unto him? And Ziba said unto the king, Jonathan hath yet a son which is lame on his feet. And the king said unto him, where is he? And Ziba said unto the king, behold, he is the house of Machir, and of the son of Amiel in Lodabar. Then King David sent and fetched him out of the house of Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodabar. Now when Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, was coming to David, he fell on his face and did reverence. And David said, Mephibosheth, and he answered, behold, thy servant. And David said unto him, fear not, for I surely show thee kindness for Jonathan thy father's sake, and will restore thee all the land of thy father, of Saul thy father. and thou shalt eat bread at my table continually. Think about it. Jonathan, in his desire to do right and to serve, helped David during times of difficulty. He was practicing the principle stated by Paul in Acts 20:35. It's more blessed to give than it is to receive. Now what's happened? Jonathan's dead. He's left behind a son that's crippled. What's going to happen to him? The time comes when David is seated on his throne, and David said, "Are there any left yet of the house of Saul?" And somebody said, "Yes, Jonathan has a son." And David said, "Send and get him. I want him to eat meat at my house," and restored to him all his land. Look at the blessing that came out of this man giving without expecting anything in return. Isn't that an encouragement for us to live life in service of others? Would it not be wonderful that if we could just practice the principle given by Paul, that it's more blessed to give than it is to receive, as Jonathan did, and that down the road somewhere, maybe even after we're gone, it may be that one of our children will be like that of Jonathan's son in need. But because out of a philosophy of life that was interested in giving, whatever may be thy need down the road sometime in life, there'll be somebody that will remember there's somebody that served and gave, not in order that they might get back, and therefore a blessing come from that. But then again, in 2 Samuel chapter 19, and in verse 31 of that chapter, there's an interesting thing that is stated. Look at it. In 2 Samuel chapter 19, Barzillai, who was a Gileadite, David is fleeing, and in the midst of his trouble, he doesn't have anything. And this man was interested in helping, had helped David at an earlier time in 2 Samuel 17, the latter part of that chapter. Gives the account of David fleeing, and verse 27 says that he came to Mahanaim, and Barzillai found David. Verse 28 says he brought beds and basins and earthen vessels and wheat and barley and flour and parched corn and beans and lentils and parched puffs and honey and butter and sheep and cheese of kine for David and for the people that were with him to eat, for they said, "The people is hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness." Now here's a man, even though David is being persecuted and there are those who are trying to take his life, is interested in doing what he can for him. Now you turn to chapter 19 and verse 31. And Barzillai the Gileadite came down from Jelum and went over Jordan with the king to conduct him over Jordan. Now Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old, and he had provided the king of sustenance while he lay at Mahanaim, for he was a very great man. And the king said unto Barzillai, "Come thou over with me, and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem." Barzillai said unto the king, "How long have I to live, that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old. Can I discern between good and evil? Can thy servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any more the voice of singing men and singing women? Wherefore then should thy servant be yet a burden unto my lord the king? The servant will go a little way over Jordan with the king, and why should the king recompense it me with such a reward?" You see, he wasn't interested in what he could get. And then, because of that, he said, "Let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again, that I may die in mine own city and be buried by the grave of my father and my mother. But behold, my servant Chimham, let him go over with my lord the king and do to him what seems good unto thee." And so here's another example of one that gave what he had, not in order that he might get something back, but in order that he might serve and that he might help David. But turn with me now to the 41st chapter of the book of Jeremiah and look at verse 17. And they departed and dwelled in the habitation of Chimham, which is by Bethlehem, to go to enter into Egypt. In all likelihood, this is the very man that Barzillai, the son of Barzillai, that's mentioned back in 2 Samuel, from which I just read. Now think about what's happened. Here's a man who practiced the philosophy of Paul. It's more blessed to give than it is to receive. And when David was in dire straits, fleeing for his life, hungry and weary, with a few people that were following him, Barzillai came and provided sustenance for him. Years pass on. The time comes and David remembers that. He's back on his throne. And he says to this man, I'll be glad to take you with me. But he said, I'm too old. Here's my son, the servant. Take care. Years pass on. The time comes down in the land of Canaan, in Palestine. And there is a habitation that is mentioned as this man. And due to the fact that it says the habitation of Chimham, which is by Bethlehem, and that was David's city, in all likelihood, this is a place that David provided for him. Now again, you see what comes from the life that lives for serving and giving without expecting anything in return? No wonder God said of Job, test him. And Satan said, ah, yeah, I know why he's doing it. He's doing it for what he can get. Now you take that away from him, and he'll curse you to your face. Here are two examples in the Old Testament of men that practiced just exactly what Acts 20:35 said, that it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. Let me turn now to the New Testament again and just briefly call attention to this false philosophy of life. We're studying in our Sunday morning class the 15th chapter of the book of Luke. You recall how we have in this chapter the story or the parable of the prodigal son and the elder brother. But I want you to look. In verse 12, it says, and the younger of them said to his father, give me the portion of goods which falleth to me. And he divided unto him his living. Now, I want you to look at his philosophy of life. He said, give me, give me, give me. And look at the outcome. Downward, 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 downward until he ended up in the hog pen. Now, I want you to look at what happened when he comes back. Verse 17 says, and when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father and say unto him, Father, I sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. He arose and came to his father, but when he was a great way off, his father saw him, had compassion, ran, fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I sinned against heaven in thy sight, and I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. Now look at the difference that had taken place. When he left home, he had the philosophy of saying, give me what's mine. When he came back, he came back saying, what can I give? Just tell me what I can give. The change that had taken place. That's exactly what Paul's talking about when he said, it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. Think about the difference in the life of this young man when he said, give me. Think of the unhappiness, the turmoil, the difficulty, the struggle, the suffering. Why? Because he had a false philosophy of life. Think about him when he came back. Came back saying, I want to give. And then look at the blessings. Listen to what he said. His father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring hither the fatted calf and kill it and let us eat and be merry. Do I want life to be like that? It comes not because that's what I'm seeking after. It comes as an indirect blessing that grows out of a life that is interested in giving. No wonder Paul said it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. But I want you to look again. Now, the eldest son was in the field, and as he came and drew nigh to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of his servants and asked what these things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he received him safe and sound. And he was angry and would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And he answered and said to his father, lo, these many years do I serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me. What? Thou never gavest me. Elder brother, what are you looking for? I'm looking for somebody to give me something. Out of that kind of life, how was he on the inside? Angry? Upset? What brought that about? He had never learned what life is all about. He had never learned the real philosophy of life, that it comes from giving and giving and giving and giving. Because God has given me so much. It's so changed my thinking about life and my philosophy of life that my purpose in living is in order that I might give. That's exactly what Ephesians 4:28 says. Let him that stole, why is a man stealing? He's interested in getting. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor with his own hands, that he may have. Is that the end of that verse? No. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor with his own hands, that he may have to give. What? That he may have to give to him that is in need. There is the philosophy of Acts 20:35 restated. And that's what life is all about. You know who the happiest people in the world are? The people that give the most and have that philosophy of life. And that's what Christianity is all about. It's to change the center of my life from what I can get to what I can give. Is that worthwhile? It was Paul that made the statement, gave the quotation in Acts 20:35. He tested that. Let me read to you a statement that Paul made, living in a prison, knowing that he's going to die. He said in 2 Timothy chapter 4, passage that all of us are familiar with, I've fought a good fight, I've finished my course, I've kept the faith. Henceforth I have laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me at that day. Not to me only, but to all them also that love his appearing. Then he mentions, Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. What's happened? Demas was seeking what he could get. And therefore, he got caught in the trap. And it ended up turning his back upon him. And then I drop on down, and I read at verse 16, "At my first answer, no man stood with me, but all men forsook me. But I pray God that it may not be laid to their charge." What an attitude. But listen to this verse. "Notwithstanding the Lord stood with me and strengthened me, that by me the preaching might be fully known, that all the Gentiles might hear, and I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion." Now look at verse 18, one of the great passages of the Bible. "And the Lord shall deliver me from every evil work, and will preserve me under his heavenly kingdom." I think that's one of the greatest verses in the Bible that has to do with death. When Paul made that statement, he wasn't thinking about being delivered from a Roman prison. He was thinking about his head being cut off. And yet he said, in view of that, that the Lord will deliver me from every evil work and will preserve me unto his heavenly kingdom. He said God would take the very means of his death and move him into a better kingdom, that heavenly kingdom. Can you think of anyone that ever gave more of life than Paul except the Lord? I trust that we can learn the lesson. Life comes with its richest blessings, not because that's what I'm seeking, but because my thinking has become so changed and motivated by what the Lord has done for me that I live to do good for others. That's what I think about. That's what I look for. And that's what I watch for. And that's where I invest my life, in doing all that I can to help others. And out of that comes riches of blessings that's beyond our comprehension. Think how the book of Job closed. He had more than he ever had. And of course, that is in the Old Testament. The New Testament is not intended to teach that we'll have more material things than we'll ever have, or that we've had in the past, because that's not what we need. We need spiritual blessings. But think about the multiplied spiritual blessings that can span the valley of the shadow of death and provide strength and courage, the resources of grace that replenish the soul. When time upon earth has been completed, and one's last journey must be made, isn't it worth all to come to have that philosophy of life? What do I live for? Do I live for what I can get? Or do I live for what I can give? It's my prayer that in these studies of leadership, all of us will learn to live and practice this philosophy of life. And I'll never learn it until I come to appreciate what God has given for me. When I allow what God has given for me to flood my soul, and to think about how much He loved me, how much He's done for me, I then, like the Apostle Paul, feel that I'm debtor to all men. I can never get it paid. And I want to spend the rest of my life giving and giving and giving and giving and giving and giving, because God has given so richly to me. That's life at its best. Are you unhappy? Self can create all kinds of problems. Look how unhappy the prodigal was down in the far country. Look how unhappy the elder brother was with the philosophy of give me, give me. Look how happy Barzillai was When a king said, come down and I'll let you sit at my table. And he said, I'm satisfied. Life is full. I've reached an age. I'm satisfied to die and be buried among my own people. Think about that. One that has come to appreciate life and whose life is so full that he'll turn down a king's offer to enjoy all that a king could offer to it. To say, let me just have what I have and enjoy. That's better than all that David could give him. Isn't it wonderful to be able to develop a life like that? I pray God that some way, somehow, I can learn that philosophy of life and use it and practice it. And use my life as giving and giving and giving and giving and giving. Because of the consciousness of how much God has given to me. Paul was bidding farewell to the elders at Ephesus. And there's no better philosophy of life that he could have left behind for them. It's interesting. The last Sunday that I was at East Gadsden before I moved to Birmingham, I used Acts 20:25. All those verses, not just Acts 20:25. Paul's farewell address. But I'm sorry that I didn't understand then what it's all about. Then I talked about the tears that he shed. And that's the way I felt when I left. 23 years passed. When I left Adamsville and the Waltons are here tonight, that's the passage that I used when I preached the last time at Adamsville. But I had come to know and appreciate so much more its meaning in 23 years. The real thrust of that is not the tears that were shed in Acts 20, but the philosophy of life that's there. Of giving and giving and giving and giving. Jesus said it's more blessed to give. And the word blessed means God approved. The God approved man, person, is the one that's learned that philosophy of life. Has the love of God touched your life and your heart? Until there is burning within you the desire to go out and reflect in a world that's selfish and that's forgotten God, God's philosophy of giving and giving and giving, then you're ready to obey the gospel of Christ. Through faith, penitence, and confession, upon the confession of your faith to be baptized into Christ. Those of us who are Christians, I trust that we leave here tonight, we'll leave with a better understanding of what it means to be a Christian. And we may need to go home and get down on our knees and ask the Lord to help us appreciate His love and mercy and grace toward us, to let it flood our souls until we can arise from our knees with the philosophy of life to spend our days in giving, in giving, and in giving wherever there are opportunity, wherever there are needs. Not just money, but to give love, to give care, to give concern, to give encouragement, to give moral support, or whatever it may be.